B-Pod Studios.
You want to talk sports in Boston? You talk to these guys.
That will now be a recycled take.
Right. But still, it's a retake. It's a reheated take. Microwave take.
Zolak and Bertrand.
Not good.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Noontime hour on a Friday here on Zolak and Bertrand. It's a Finish Strong Friday. And Finish Strong Fridays are brought to you by 128 Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electric. When you think about ductless heating and cooling, think 128. Convenient to install, great rebates, no duct work needed. Visit call 128.com. Phil Perry of NBC Sports Boston is with us in our Town Fair Tire studios for the next hour. Let's see if that headphone cord of yours is going to reach.
I think we're good.
Yeah, we good? We might need to take the glass off the countertop here.
We'll figure this out.
Yeah.
This Blink-182 is getting me fired up,
there
though.
You go. Attaboy.
I don't know about you guys.
Patriots-Jets Sunday. Of course, the place to hear the game right here on 98.5, the Sports Hub. Part of the reason we sent Zoe home today. He needs his rest. He needs to call the game and be healthy on Sunday when he gets in that booth with Sosi. That's what I've been telling him all day. All day. So you got to be ready for Sunday, dude. Big one on Sunday. So Patriots-Jets this Sunday, Phil, and you've got two rookie quarterbacks. One that has been getting a lot of praise, has been very accurate, has limited turnovers, has tried to do his best to take care of the football, and has completed a lot of passes, that being Mac Jones. The other one being a guy who was highly touted, drafted higher, has a better arm, and is more athletic in Zach Wilson for the New York Jets.
Mm-hmm.
I don't hear a lot of praise being thrown Zach Wilson's way so far this season, but when you're looking at the AFC East, there is now the possibility that the Miami Dolphins move on from Tua and get Deshaun Watson. And for the sake of the conversation, we're going to hope that happens, even though in real life, we don't want that to happen at all here in New England. But let's assume that happens. That means the two best quarterbacks in the division will be the guy, Josh Allen in Buffalo, and then the other guy in Miami, and Deshaun Watson. Watson, who I think is better than Allen, but that's a different discussion.
Okay.
All right. That means 1 and 2, you've got the two best quarterbacks in the division. The question then becomes, which of the other two young quarterbacks would become the third best quarterback in the AFC East over the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, however many years you want to put on that? Where's this going with these two young guys?
It's a great question, and it's a question that I pose to a handful of people across the league, quarterback evaluators of different types, scouts, coaches, executives. And what was interesting to me was it wasn't the slam dunk that I thought it would be. Because I know we're only 6 weeks into the regular season, but you mentioned it. We're not hearing any praise for Zach Wilson because he's basically at the bottom of the league in every statistical category that there is. They've won one game. They're coming off a bye. And of course, there's room for him to grow. But when I look at it, the layman, right? I look at Mac Jones and somebody who's proven that he's tough, he's accurate, even though their record is 2-4. I don't think any of us here would say, well, they're 2-4 because of Mac Jones. He's been one of, I would say he's the least of their issues right
We've
now.
Said this week he is their best offensive player.
I would agree with that. I would say he's in the discussion for best overall player if Matt Judon hadn't gotten out to such a good start, right? So he's in that mix. And so I figured reaching out to these people, saying, essentially asking them, if you're the Jets and you could snap your fingers and swap quarterbacks right now with the Patriots, would you do it? Not a single one told me yes, because they all still believe in the talent. And these are people that believe in player development. They believe in the ability to grow and grow, especially once you get into the right system and the right pieces are put in around you. And so the NFL's not giving up on Zach Wilson. And there are still a lot of people out there who think very highly of Zach Wilson, even though Mac Jones is setting records. I think he will be the first rookie quarterback in NFL history. The next time he attempts 30 passes and completes 70% of them in a game, he'll be the first guy to do that as a rookie 5 times in his rookie season. The only other two who have done it 4 times, who he's now tied with, were rookies of the year, Justin Herbert and Dak Prescott. So he's in some elite company already, Mac Jones is. And yet still, that physical skill set that Zach Wilson brings to the table, is enough to make football people salivate. And that's why when you say, Beadle, 2-3 years from now, where is this thing going to be? That's what's interesting to me. Because year one for Zach Wilson, he still needs to learn how to play the position. He is, and this was one suggestion to me, was if you want to comp for Zach Wilson and his trajectory, stay right there in the division. Josh Allen. Josh Allen was completing around 50% of his passes. He was an out-and-out disaster. He had no idea what was going on behind center on a week-to-week basis as
a rookie.
Bad
decisions left and right.
It was incredible. And it was one of those deals where you looked at it and you said, well, what were you expecting? Because this was kind of who he was in college, too. Incredible physical skill set. Had no idea how to play. Well, now look at him. He's in the MVP discussion basically 2 years after that, and he will be, it looks like, for the foreseeable future. So that's what the Jets have to be hoping for. He clearly is not there yet, and even though Mac Jones has gotten out to this sizable lead as they start their careers, we can't say just yet who the better quarterback's going to be. And that is really interesting to me because it gets back to everything about what do you believe in at that position? What do you think wins at the level? What kinds of risks are you willing to take to make your team a great team as opposed to a good team? All of that we can talk about for years when we're looking at this matchup between the Patriots and the Jets.
Rex Ryan has said this week that he stands by his comments that Mac Jones is a pea shooter, and has said he doesn't have an NFL hose, and that when you get to the cold weather months, it's going to be more difficult for Mac Jones to make big throws. Do you buy that?
I think it's possible. Mac Jones is from Jacksonville. He played at Alabama. You know, you go back and you try to find bad weather games at Alabama, and you know, I don't think any of them are getting into the 20s in terms of the temps. I don't know how many games the guys played in snow. You know, I think all of that is TBD. You know, until he does it, how could you say that you feel good about him doing it? I will say I was impressed by the way he performed against the Bucs in the rain. To me, he was the one who looked like he had better control of the football in that game between the two quarterbacks.
Well, he also didn't have the emotional element that Brady had.
He did not. And right? So maybe that was what was impacting Brady, because we know Brady, typically in bad weather, is phenomenal. He's got these massive hands that allow him to do whatever he wants with the football, no matter the conditions. Mac Jones, hand size, it's fine. It's good enough. It's not Tom Brady level.
Could you give me numbers, please?
Measurables.
I believe Mac Jones is, if let's look this up. I think he's 10.25. That might be too high.
If you're
I
right.
I think Brady's like 10.75.
You didn't know that.
Mac Jones, 9.75.
9.75. Okay. That's big enough. That would be considered big enough. Brady's got to be like up near, is he over 10.5?
9.38.
Ah, what? This really hurts me. Because this is like kind of my wheelhouse usually.
I'm known as the quarterback hand size guy.
I'm a big hand size guy.
I go on internationally talking about it.
We did do arm length with Paulie a couple weeks ago, and I think I was right on that.
I've been on many panels as an expert.
I think Matt Light and Isaiah Wynn have very similar arm lengths. I'll stand by that one. I haven't looked that one up either. Well, that's interesting to me. Okay.
So hand size seems to be something that you could easily manipulate just in, you know, it's like stand up as straight as you can. But you could just, you know, stretch your hand out.
They try.
Well, yeah, it's measured from pinky finger to the tip of your thumb.
But you
right?
see guys that are trying to work on their hand flexibility, like in the hallways in Indianapolis at the combine.
Oh.
That's interesting. Just, to, you know, having shaken Brady's hand before, it felt like his fingertips were up near my elbow. Like, that's, you know, he's got big hands. He's large hands. I don't know. Haven't had a chance to do that with Mac Jones yet. So we'll size him up when we get that opportunity. I don't know.
Can we get a measurement on yours to maybe?
I guess we could. Do you guys have any sort of measuring device? We got a ruler?
I think you got a good size mitt there.
I don't think it's bad. I could palm a basketball.
Zoe's told me that I have large hands.
You do have large hands. Yeah. I can tell just by looking at them.
Yeah.
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 I would say you're over 9. You're probably 9.25.
9.25.
Yeah.
Is that what they are? Oh, we'll have to get a measurement on that. We'll have to.
Dak Prescott, huge hands.
What's he got?
10.88.
10.8?
10.88.
Can I tell you the largest hand?
I think that's Gronk. Look up Gronk. Are close to 11 also.
I've shaken Brady's
hand.
Will you
get on that party for me? Just Google that, please.
You know who's got bigger hands than Brady? Willie McGinnis.
Yeah, there's another one.
But no one cares about the hand size on the linebackers and ends.
Speak for yourself.
You know, no one's worried about
what's
that.
He got, like 13s?
Oh,
Gronk.
Very big.
10.75. Good call, Phil.
10.75. Yeah, 10.5. It's pretty good.
I didn't say 10.5.
It's almost 10.5. That's what we round.
No,
round.
10 and three quarters is more than 10.
Oh, 10 and three quarters. Sorry. Yeah, I thought you said 10 and three eighths.
Hand size takes left and right here with Phil Perry of NBC Sports Boston. You know, where do these two quarterbacks go? Two rookies, one that's received a lot of praise, one that's been sort of ridiculed at times, and Zach Wilson. They meet this weekend in Foxborough. The importance of this game to the Patriots. We'll talk about that with Phil coming up next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Phone lines are always open for you.
Answer the phone!
Give us, if you want to call up out of the blue.
Answer the phone!
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Here on Zolak and Bertrand Beadle, Hardy, Phil Perry with you from our Town Fair Tire Studios on this Finish Strong Friday, brought to you by 128 Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electric. All right, let's talk about the importance of this weekend, Phil. I earlier was talking with Zone. I said, this is a must win. They have to win this game. They've got no choice. I can't imagine them dropping to 2-5 with a loss against the New York Jets and still keeping it all together and keeping it positive and keeping it, hey, we're just going week to week and we're just going to worry about battling back to 500. The further away you get from that, the more difficult the season becomes from just the math standpoint, but the mental standpoint as well.
No doubt. It's a must win. I think we're kind of verging on that every week though now, aren't we?
We are.
That's just where they're at in terms of the schedule and their record. And when you see a team that's got one win, then it ramps it up even more. I think the question is, like, do we feel like it's a team that we should be talking about when it comes to the playoffs?
No.
It doesn't to you?
No.
I still think it's within reach. I think they're an okay 2-4 team. It almost pains me to say, and I know it sounds ridiculous. But they've been in how many one-score games? They've been in four. They've won one. You know, if Kendrick Bourne runs a three-step slant instead of a one-step slant the other night, and there's no pick six, how does that game finish up? If Damian Harris, that's the most obvious one, and we forget about it, I think, occasionally because it happened all the way back in week one. Right. The game was won. That game was over. That's what makes that fumble so painful for the Patriots. So, you know, you're really not all that far. And this is what, you know, talking to Kurt Warner on the next Pats podcast, he loves Mac Jones. He doesn't love him so much that he says that there aren't things that he could still be doing to help his team win games. He said, I mean, like, look at it. He's like, I understand people in Boston are probably freaking out about where the Patriots are right now. But for me, from a national perspective, this is him saying this, he's like, they could easily have four wins. They probably should have four wins.
Except they don't.
And then the narrative
changes.
See,
I don't agree with that. They should have four wins. I mean, what separates the good teams from the bad?
Right.
Or
the screw-ups.
What you do in those critical moments, whether or not you do catch that pass. I mean, that's what has always separated the Patriots in their runs. I mean, this is a team that likes to routinely win Super Bowls by field goals. And so those are the things that separate bad and good from great. Execution counts in a big way. And when you lose by a score, it doesn't make it any better. Yeah, it might mean you're not as bad as the worst teams in the league, that there might be other 2-4 teams in the NFL that you say, well, I think the Patriots could be better or worse than that team. The other 2-4 team in the AFC is the Colts. Are they better or worse than the Colts?
I think they're better than the Colts.
Okay. The Seahawks are 2-4 in the NFC.
That one's got to have an asterisk, right? You
got an injury at quarterback.
Yeah. So, he's one of the best quarterbacks in football. I'm not willing to say they're better than the Seahawks. They're better than the Seahawks without Russell Wilson.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, without Russell Wilson, it's a different story.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, so what is the case that they could be one of the four win teams?
Do we think do we think they have a chance at the playoffs? That's what I'm asking. You're saying it's a must win if you want to make the playoffs. Like,
I think it's a must win for both of those reasons.
Climate barking up the wrong tree here, or
so that's what I was like thinking. It's like must win for what purposes? For playoffs? Yeah, of course you got to be thinking about that. But in terms
because they're teetering on a loss.
What you think about what's your season? Do you want a lost season? And when you think about it, like you said, Phil, like I think they all are. And I would say, aside from the Buffalo games, and for playoff purposes, of course you still put them in the category if you got to win at least one of them. But in terms of the teams that you could beat, like with the way that you're playing and the way that you're coached and some of the talent that's there, there isn't another team on the schedule where it's like, okay, but that's just asking too much for them to go and beat them in that spot. I mean, you're looking at teams that you could conceivably beat in given weeks when you look at the rest of the schedule. Jets, of course, Chargers, Panthers. Was Cleveland like amazing last night?
No.
No.
I mean, also dealing with an injury.
Could you beat the Falcons? Could you beat the Colts? Yes, these are all. Could you beat the Dolphins if you were to see them again? The Jaguars. Yeah. Like, these are. Okay, so.
But who are the guaranteed wins left on this schedule? And I think
there's no such thing.
There's no such thing.
Well, no. I mean, in terms of talent, you say they absolutely should beat that team. They don't have any excuses. They don't have any excuses for not beating the Jets. They don't have any excuses for not beating Jacksonville. Two teams left on the schedule.
You play that right now, the way the season stands, even at 2-4, aside from the two Bills games, you could talk yourself into thinking they've got a good chance at winning this week, and anything less, you're going to be disappointed.
I just don't know how
right
you
now.
Did.
But you could also talk yourself into the inverse,
of
which is what's scary.
Well, that's what. Okay, so
they play the Texans close.
Starting on Sunday.
I say there are no guarantees, even this week.
Well, I just think it's hard to say that you can envision all of these wins over good teams or teams with winning records by also saying that there are no games on the schedule that there's no excuse for losing. Like, if you're going to say one,
I think it's hard for us to wrap our heads around because that's how the rest of the league has operated for a long, long time, and the Patriots have not. That's been the case for a lot of teams for a lot of years.
You're describing, though, Artie, like what ends up being an 8-8 or
the middle of the road team.
I'm putting it in the context of this week, and if you want to talk about what level of must win is it for how you look at the rest of the season.
What happens if they lose? It's
then
over.
You're talking about lost season.
This season is done.
You're at 2-5.
And they haven't even made it out of October.
And you can't get a win at home, and you can't beat a bad team. That's how you're talking about this team on Monday. So
I think you're talking about being potentially that. Then what we start talking about is whether or not they should be sellers at the trade deadline.
Yes.
Because that's what's coming up.
That's an interesting topic. If they win, they're 3-5. Should they be buyers at 3-5?
They should have been sellers last year, in my opinion, and they weren't. I don't see them selling this year because I do think they'll win this game. And I think by the time you get to the trade deadline, you'll be able to talk yourself into being a playoff team. And so I don't think they're going to sell. I really don't, because it should have been last year and they refused.
If there was a case to sell a player, who's the player?
It's a great question.
I don't know who that would be.
Maybe there's a team out there that would be willing to take Isaiah Wynn off your hands because he's only got 1 year left on his contract and he's paid basically as like a middle of the road left tackle for 1 year if you think he's got potential. But he's, I don't know, is any team going to be thrilled about paying Isaiah Wynn $10 million next year?
No,
because
that
looks like an overpay.
They picked up the option on Wynn, not on Michelle. They traded Michelle.
And Wynn, I think that was a smart decision too.
And Wynn has been disappointing.
Those are mutually exclusive.
Yeah, no, they just happen to be the same draft class, and the decision was at the same time. That's all.
Yeah.
Paulie's in the truck. Paulie.
There's Paulie.
Well, Isaiah Wynn's a left guard. He's not exactly, never has been, never will be. He doesn't have the mentality. Or when he does have the mentality to play right tackle, which they finally put him at, which I've been hopping on for ages, okay? Because
Paulie,
he does have that mentality.
Hanging around with Zoe? Sounds sick, Paulie.
No, I'm fine.
Okay. All
right. I'm lying on the couch watching you guys as I'm talking to you on the phone.
All right.
What's your hand size?
A few minutes. I just came in for a few minutes.
You ever measure your hands, Paulie?
I'm telling you, he's not. When you get a kick came inside, if you got to hold on to him, for $10 million, you're going to be getting a lot more production out of him at left guard. He's athletic. He's not big enough. He's not tough enough to play left tackle. He's never been a tackle. He's never been in his life. People like compare it to the Matt Light situation. Matt Light was an animal. He was a tackle coming out of Purdue, and that's why they chose him. They're banging their head against the wall on this kid, but they finally moved the 1 year to right tackle. I was
strong.
Right at the 1 minute mark.
Strong take.
I agree with Paulie on this.
But he's not a guard. He played tackle in college.
Win as a tackle in the NFL. I'm sorry. I know he's had some good games, but it was never going to be a great thing. I've always felt that way. The day they drafted him, you're like, this guy's not big enough. You're gonna stick him at left tackle. I don't disagree with what Paulie's saying. That he should make the transition permanently to being an interior lineman. And I'm not saying he has to do that with this team. I've never been high on Wayne.
Not all good tackles are Tyron Smith size. That's all. That's what I was saying with Light. That's what I was saying with the kid in L.A. I almost said San Diego. You can get away with it if you're athletic enough. And they've liked him. They have liked him. That's why they paid him.
They're obsessed.
When he was on the field.
They're obsessed with more athletic linemen. They are.
Which I think listen, are they? I don't know. They also are playing Michael Wenu, who's 350 pounds. A lot.
And they brought back Trent Brown.
He's a great athlete, though, for a big guy. It's interesting the way they've built it. It feels like at times they want size and at times they don't, right? They've got Shaq Mason at a guard who's an undersized guy. David Andrews is relatively undersized at center. They've got an undersized left tackle, but they have the biggest right tackle in football. And they have one of the biggest guards in football, Michael Wenu. So it's like, I don't know, maybe there's a consistency issue there. But Wynn has been a problem. I wrote about it this week, just five players that need to perform better for this team to improve and for the record to improve with them. And Isaiah Wynn's at the top of the list because you can understand the right tackle issues, the left tackle issues. There's no reason for it.
Phil Perry is with us in studio. More with Phil coming up on the Patriots game this Sunday against the Jets, and more of your thoughts as well next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Drive home with Felger and Matt. Bertrand on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Getting born in the state of Mississippi. Papa was a copper and the mama was a hippie. In Alabama, she was swinging a hammer. Price you gotta pay when you break the panorama. She never knew that there was anything more than gold. What in the world does your company tell?
Phil Perry of NBC Sports Boston is with us. Here on Zolak and Bertrand, RJ Bell will join us coming up at 1 o'clock today. I believe the phones are frozen again, T-Bone. Very frustrating. We didn't even give anything away.
T-Bone's on it. He just gave us a thumbs up. He's on it.
Is it good?
No, I'm just acknowledging
it. Oh, is there anyone on the line?
Yes, Ryan and Malden.
Okay, Ryan. Let's go to Ryan. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's up?
So I just want to make the point, Mac Jones going to make it through the season when the colder weather starts to come around. I don't think he's got the guts or grit. Just like the Cowboys, when December comes around, he's going to fall off. You know, I don't think he's going to make it.
I don't think you know until you know.
I mean,
right? He has been, in the few instances we've seen him in inclement weather, and it's just been rain. It hasn't been the cold. And so that brings in a whole new set of circumstances. I understand that. But whether it's practice in the spring, camp, I believe there might have been one bad weather day, or that Bucs game, he's handled it pretty well. So, again, there's not much in the way of sample size in terms of evidence that he can do it. So, you know, we can all sit here and guess, but I don't think you know until you know. And we just went over the hand size thing. His hands are big enough.
Yeah, we definitely went over that.
I mean, I feel like we covered that. I feel like we covered that rather thoroughly.
What is the hand size one more time?
I believe it was 9.38.
9.38.
And that's
almost
small.
9.5. No, that's fine.
It's
that's
fine.
Not small. Garoppolo, okay. I think Garoppolo was 9.
No, not 9.75. Excuse me.
Wow.
Mac Jones is 9.75?
9.75.
There have been 20 quarterbacks in the history of the NFL. This is great.
It's just a hand size hour. I love it.
Neil Collins, frequent emailer Neil Collins with his Neil Collins email of the day. Always big on the statistical research. 20 quarterbacks have been measured at 10 inches or more. 5 of the 20 have won the Super Bowl.
Wow.
Peyton Manning, Brett Favre, Drew Brees, Russell Wilson, deceivingly big hands, and Nick Foles.
But I was looking at some of the big hand sizes, too. There's also guys like Ryan Mallett in there, just like big dudes with big hands.
Sure.
Like,
yep. What Ryan Mallett, 10.75, which ties in with Ryan Fitzpatrick, also at 10.75. Jim Druckenmiller, 11.25. Man, you almost wonder what you do with all that hand.
How have we not played Violent Femmes yet? Blister in the Sun.
Have we pulled up?
Big hands, I know you're the one.
Yeah, I like that.
How has that not been dropped in?
Have we pulled up Zach Wilson's? Because Zach Wilson, to me, feels like somebody who might have big hands because he's just so adept at throwing on the move and his off-platform stuff is still so strong.
Phil, if you're drafting
right
now.
9.5.
9.5.
If you're drafting quarterbacks right now, would you draft with a pick in the first round, Mac Jones or Zach Wilson?
Right now, knowing what we know, I think it's pretty easy to say Mac Jones, but I think I even would go, it depends on where you're at as a team, honestly, is how I feel about it. And when I say that, I mean, are you so far gone as a franchise that you need a transcendent player? Or do you feel like the rest of your roster is close enough that if you have a good but not transcendent quarterback, you can be a real contender? Because to me, it's sort of it's like a one in the hand versus two in the bush type of deal, right? Mm-hmm. Because with Zach Wilson, you're hoping against hope that he turns into Josh Allen. You have no idea if he's going to be able to do it. You know, talking to Robert Saleh this week about where Zach Wilson's at and where Mac Jones is at. And I thought he gave a great scouting report on Mac Jones, which is, man, I mean, he's checking it down when he needs to. He's looking for the big play, but he's totally comfortable getting to that shorter throw, and he's been efficient, and he's been accurate, and he gets through it all, and it's basically the antithesis of what a scouting report on Zach Wilson would be to this point. And so I asked him, I said, well, would you rather your guy plays like the Patriots guy? Because he was so complimentary of Mac Jones, and it's so opposite of what we've seen from Zach Wilson. He said, it's just what Mac Jones is doing is he's just playing quarterback. What our guy can do is special. It's spectacular. It's the upper echelon. These are all words that he used. It's the upper echelon of what people can do in the NFL. Now we just have to get him to understand quarterback, is how he put it.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty big hurdle to me. And so if you can bring somebody in that you know understands how to play, even if he's not going to be giving you special plays week after week after week, if the rest of your roster is there, you can be a pretty good team. That's what I thought this group was going to be this year. But if the rest of your roster is gone and you need somebody to really lift everybody up and you're okay waiting a year or two or maybe even longer, then go with the transcendent guy. And that's why we're seeing people like Zach Wilson get drafted highly, is because of the Patrick Mahomes comp or the Josh Allen comp. It's teams are willing to be patient if you're going to eventually turn into one of the best five quarterbacks in football. That's Zach Wilson's ceiling, according to these people that I spoke to this week. We know the Jets must feel the same way. That's probably not going to be Mac Jones' ceiling, in all likelihood, because I think we're still trying to figure out, okay, what's his big play going to look like? Like, when he is, sort of coming into his own.
When he is the best version of Mac Jones, what does it look like?
What makes him special,
right?
Because getting to the check down is great. That can help you stay in games. That can help you win a lot of games. But can it help your team be a special team?
Can it elevate your team to the next level?
And I think that is the risk that you're willing to take if you're a team that's drafting near the top of the draft. Is we're not looking for Charlie Checkdown. Robert Saleh said that word for word the other day. I don't think it was a shot at Mac Jones at all, but teams want their quarterbacks to be able to make explosive plays, whether it's Brady from the pocket or Lamar Jackson with his legs or Patrick Mahomes on the move. You have to make special plays to be a really good team in this league. That's just how it works right now.
It's kind of an interesting exercise to go through the quarterbacks and, pick the, you know, the 10 best now or the 10 best out of the last 10 years. And like, what is the one play? What encapsulates them and their, you know, good to greatness?
What's your superpower? You'll hear people say that.
Yeah.
What's your superpower? What's Mac Jones' superpower? Right now, it's his brain. Will his brain allow him to do things with his body that make those special plays more readily identifiable? Will his brain allow him to push the ball down the field and into a tight window because he knows he can get it there, because he knows he's accurate, even though he doesn't have the strongest arm in the world? Does his brain allow him to get out of a certain play when he sees an exotic look on the other side and hit a slant that goes for 60 yards? I think that stuff is in him, but I think people are also sort of still waiting to see how consistently he can put those types of plays together to make what is not a great Patriots team right now a good, competitive, competent, contending team, because that's the nature of the deal at that position. You've got to have a special player if you want to be a special team. The Patriots had the Patriots envisioned themselves as being a winning team this year, right?
Yes.
They might need their quarterback to be special a little bit more often.
So do you think the Patriots offense, I've talked at length about this with Chris Gasper, requires someone who is upper echelon, not necessarily Brady, but a top five type of quarterback?
I missed the very first part of that. What did Gasper say?
What we've discussed is, does the Patriots offense require
that
someone who's the top of the sport, someone that's a Brady or a Rodgers or Russell Wilson, or is that what this offense needs?
I think it's what every offense needs to be a true competitor, you know, to be a true contender. You can't have Kirk Cousins or Derek Carr and be an elite team in the league. That's what it looks like right now. And if that's Mac Jones' ceiling, that can be really valuable.
Let's put a name to it. Let's say he's Matt Ryan.
If he's
Super Bowl,
okay.
Was leading in the Super Bowl.
It's a great
Bowl.
Conversation, yes.
Right? What if he's Matt Ryan?
If
that's
he's
pretty
Matt
good
Ryan,
if you're Matt Ryan, right?
If he's Matt Ryan, home run, especially on a rookie contract. Because you can build up the rest of your roster to win. And that's what executive scouts will tell you. If you can get there early, your team has a chance to be really, really good. And that's what we've seen with some of these young quarterbacks. I mean, Jared Goff helps a team get to the Super Bowl. Is Jared Goff a great quarterback?
No.
Not at all. But
that'd be close. I would say he's a bad quarterback.
But you're not paying him anything early in his career. The rest of his roster is allowed to be great around him. And you can get all the way to the very end of a Super Bowl and be sniffing the thing. So if he can be that early in his career, that's great for the Patriots. Is it a great thing long term? Are you willing to pay that guy? Are you willing to build around that guy? Matt Ryan, to me, might be that flashpoint. Like that might be the level that you have to get above. You know what I mean? If you're Matt Ryan, if you're Kirk Cousins, if you're Derek Carr, you're going to have to make a really hard decision. I think the right decision would probably say, you know what? Let's dip back into the pool. Mm-hmm. Let's try to draft another guy because this probably isn't good enough.
Phil Perry, one more segment with you. And the phones are back up and working, so jump on board. 617-779-0985.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Putting you in the middle of the story.
It's gotta be the closest thing to Woodstock.
In the middle of the day.
It's like an acidic trip.
There's always a little bit of heaven in the disaster area.
Zolak and Bertrand, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I feel just fine. 617-779-0985. Let's get to the phones. Phil Perry with us for this final segment before we talk to RJ Bell coming up at 1 o'clock. Mike is in Taunton. What's up, Mike?
Hey guys. Yeah, well, I'm just
wondering what you guys think about Mac Jones' whole reputation would be a lot different if the defense had a shred of integrity and they could make fucking maybe one stop.
Whoa. Stream us at 985thesportshub.com. That's where you can hear that call in its entirety.
It's one for the streamers.
Yikes.
Every once in a while.
All right, let's pick up his point, though.
Yeah,
let's move on from what he said. Is a lot of that on the defense. I mean, look at last week's game. Dallas had the ball for quite a bit of time. They had over 500 yards of offense, if you include the yardage in overtime. It was approaching 500 in regulation. And could they get key stops when it mattered most? The answer to that has, for the most part, been no.
And it was not just the Cowboys game. You're right. I mean, it's Miami, the end of the game. You know, Miami basically ran the four-minute offense exactly how they wanted to and was able to just drain the entire clock. I mean, all of these close games, you're going to get moments where you can look at the defense and say, what is going on there? I would say this, just to shine a light on the other side. That Cowboys game, what happened at the end of the game? The defense was gassed. Why were they gassed? In part because they couldn't get off the field, right?
Yes.
But in part because their offense could not stay on the field. Look at the drive log from that game. I mean, after the two touchdowns, which were very short drives, by the way, which is unlucky, but whatever. You're going punt, turnover, blocked punt, three straight three and outs, a five and out. Like the middle of the game offensively was a nothing burger. They could do zero offensively. And yeah, you get your defense playing 90 however many snaps by the end of the thing, and they don't have the legs to make a play. So it's not just on the defense. Like, I think we fall into a little bit too much of, hey, Mac's been good. Mac's been good enough that the offense can carry this team. And why aren't they letting him do that? The offense really hasn't. If you look at the offense relative to the rest of the league, they're still essentially a bottom third offense. And you could say that's because of play calling and it's because they're not aggressive enough on fourth down. And you might be right. But the numbers are what they are through 6 weeks of the season. You know, I'm not willing to put everything on the defense when we see this team fail. The defense should be better. That's the veteran side of the ball. That is, I think, if you're just looking at it player for player, that's the more talented side of the ball, more experienced side of the ball. So you should be able to lean on them in big moments more than you have. But the offense is not exempt from blame here either.
Now, the time of possession thing, I remember in the Cowboys game, just a couple of minutes into the fourth quarter, I think there's 13 minutes left. And Louth showed me, he like pointed at his screen the time of possession. And at that moment, it was like, I want to say like 28-19. Like it was a big enough gap at that point to where no matter what happens here now in the fourth quarter, those guys are going to be gassed at this point. It may have been more like, you know, 20, I think it was maybe 29-18, something like that, but whatever. They were on the field, you know, by a 2-1 margin more than the Patriots. And at that point, all right, whether it's the fault of the defense or the offense, the result is the same. You've got a gassed defense. And even if the Cowboys just have a couple of standard drives, you're going up against a tired, you know, unit of defense out there that's just not going to be able to do much.
You can't live like that. That's the thing. And I would be for the Patriots putting more on Mac Jones's plate, i.e. letting him throw more often on first down, letting him work from the spread more frequently, because I think he's pretty comfortable there. And that'll be interesting this week to see if they allow him to do some of those things, because this is a team that you should be able to kind of do what you want offensively against. And so are they willing to do that? Are they willing to put it in his hands a little bit more often, throw when the defense is not expecting you to throw on early downs, and trying to make yourselves a little bit more unpredictable? Because when they did that early against the Cowboys, that's when they had a ton of success. Throwing on first down out of heavy personnel packages where it looked like they were going to try to run the football down their throats. Can you lean on more of that? I asked Bill Belichick about it the day after the game, and he said, you know, some of those heavier packages, you know, I don't know if you really have like 25 plays going into a week with some of those heavier packages. I would say maybe you should get a few more plays because you looked really good doing those things. And if you're running out of plays, you know, we know Josh McDaniels can cook up a two tight end offense that can carry a team. We've seen it before. So you should have more at your disposal, I think, moving forward, because it's pretty clear, or at least it was last week, that's when you're at your best. And so that's something I'll be looking for this week. Because again, against the Jets, you should be able to establish whatever it is you want your identity to be. You should be able to do it this weekend. And so maybe they make a statement in that regard.
Statement. I'd like that. We'd all like that. Phil, appreciate your time today.
All right, guys.
Thanks for being here.
Appreciate you.
That's it. Phil Perry, done.
See you Sunday.
We'll see you Sunday. Phil will join us on pregame coverage on Patriots Preview coming up on Sunday, leading you up to 1 o'clock kick right here on the Sports Hub. RJ Bell, live from Vegas, joins us right after the headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.